Good morning. I trust you all had a nice Shavuot, hopefully a quiet Shavuot, all things considered. Many rabbis, well-meaning rabbis, begin their drasha on Shavuot as follows. They'll say, whereas by all the other Moadim and Regalim, we have unique mitzvot from the Torah. On Rosh Hashanah, we have a mitzvah to sound the shofar. On Yom Kippur, we have a mitzvah to fast, to afflict ourselves. On Pesach, the matzah, and to relate the story of the Exodus from Egypt, Sifur Yetziat Mitzrayim. On Sukkot, we have the mitzvah of Yeshiva Basukkah, sitting, dwelling, living in the sukkah. And the mitzvah of Nitzilat Lulav, taking the four species. But on Shavuot, we have no unique mitzvot. And so, what is the mitzvah of the day? What is our Avodat Hayom? Talmud Torah. The study of Torah. That's all we have on Shavuot. Zman Matan Toratenu. So, let's engage in the study of Torah. Let's stay up all night with engaging shiurim and coffee and cheesecake, of course. Some fancy places will even have sushi. But the Avodat Hayom on Shavuot, the mitzvah of the day, is engaging in Torah study. And it's a beautiful idea. There's only one problem. It's not true. We do have mitzvot unique to the holiday of Shavuot. We have the Shtei Halechem, the two loaves brought in the Holy Temple. V'hikravtem mincha chadasha l'Hashem, you shall offer a new meal offering to God, a reference to the Shtei Halechem, and the mitzvah of Bikurim. Now, you'll say, but Rabbi, Mikar Adin, technically, Bikurim, this gift of your first fruits to the Kohen in Yerushalayim, technically that can be brought from after Sukkot all the way until Chanukah. That is technically true with some modifications, but the very identity of Shavuot in the Torah is the Yom HaBikurim. It's called the Chag HaBikurim, the festival of the first fruits by the Torah. Now, it's fascinating because, again, if you want to get technical and split hairs, in the Torah, there's no explicit mention of Shavuot as Zman Matan Toratenu, that Shavuot celebrates the day on which we received the Torah from Sinai. We have a tradition and our sages tell us, okay, but if you want to get technical, there's no explicit mention in the Torah itself that Shavuot is the day on which we receive the Torah at Sinai. In fact, and there are many reasons given for this, but the Torah doesn't explicitly tell us on which day we received the Torah at Sinai. Right? You have to make all sorts of fanciful calculations, and in fact, this leads to a dispute in the Talmud. If you look in the Masechet Shabbat, Daf Pei Vav, Pei Zayin, there's a machloket, bo'eret v'so'eret, a raging dispute and debate as to when the Jewish people received the Torah at Mount Sinai. And there are all sorts of different calculations there because the Torah doesn't mention it explicitly. And in the context of Shavuot, the Torah doesn't tell us that Shavuot is the day in which we receive the Torah. And as you know, the Torah doesn't tell us when to observe Shavuot, right? Torah doesn't say that Shavuot is to be observed on the 6th of Sivan. It just tells us to count 50 days from Pesach. And by the way, there could be years when we don't have a fixed calendar when Shavuot is not celebrated on the 6th of Sivan, but rather 50 days from Pesach. Depends on when we celebrate Pesach, but that's a whole other discussion. And as I said, there are many different explanations given. One very simple explanation why the Torah almost intentionally omits a specific date with regards to the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai. I mean, you can imagine such a seminal event. We should know when it actually took place. The Torah doesn't tell us the date. And why the Torah omits the date that Shavuot is to be observed, a very simple explanation is because anytime we engage in the study of Torah, we're standing at Sinai. We're experiencing revelation. Torah study is a divine encounter. It's a rendezvous with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So anytime you're engaged in Torah study, you are at Mount Sinai. That's why some have the custom to stand whenever the Torah is read publicly, not only on Shavuot, when we get up to the Ten Commandments, or Parshat Yitro. And by the way, that custom is actually somewhat controversial, but that's for another time. But while the Shulchan Aruch rules that one may sit down during the reading of the Torah, there are those who stand anytime the Torah is being read publicly. Why? Because we are reenacting, so to speak, the experience at Sinai. We're experiencing revelation. The Torah describes how that shofar blast that we heard at Har Sinai kept getting stronger and stronger, but it doesn't say it ever stopped. Because in a sense, that blast can still be heard today. You just have to be attuned to it. You just have to listen for it. So whenever we study Torah, we are standing at Sinai. And so some explain that's why the Torah omits the date the Torah was given at Har Sinai, because it's relevant every day. And maybe that's why the Torah also omits a date with regards to Shavuot. But that's a long digression. Thank you. But what I wanted to point out is it's fascinating. You know, we make a big deal of Shavuot as Zman Matan Torateinu, and that is important, and that is crucial, and that is part of our tradition. But the Torah does not identify Shavuot as Zman Matan Torateinu, but the Torah does identify Shavuot as the Yom HaBikurim, the day when we would bring our first fruits to Yerushalayim, to the Holy Temple, and give them to a Kohen. And this morning, I wanted to explore together with you this mitzvah Bikurim. As I said, you know, it can be brought all the way until Chanukah, so even though Shavuot is over, the mitzvah is still very relevant. I think this particular mitzvah is so vital and perhaps especially relevant right now, in light of what we're going through right now, as we'll see together this morning. And this mitzvah is very unique for a number of reasons. If you take a look at source number one, I put a number of psukim from the beginning of Parshat Ki Tavo, where the Torah instructs that when we enter into the land of Israel, the land that Hashem has given us as an inheritance, and we take possession of it, we're supposed to take from the first of our fruits, the first fruits of our land, and bring them to the place that Hashem will choose for His name to be, for His name to dwell there. Of course, that's a reference to Yerushalayim and specifically to the Beit HaMikdash. Hamakom asher yivchar Hashem Elokecha l'shaken shemo sham. They said Hashem will choose His name to dwell. And the Torah continues, you will come to the Kohen and you will say, and the Torah continues with this verbal declaration that the individual bringing his Bikurim would say. Now, the Mishnah already mentions that those who knew this declaration would say it by themselves. Those who could read Hebrew would read this declaration. Those who would not, the Kohen would read for them or would say the Pesukim for them. And then the sages saw that there were individuals who, you know, they were embarrassed to show their ignorance. They were embarrassed if a Kohen would have to read for them, so they instituted that the Kohen reads for everyone, even those who are educated, even those who could read for themselves. But in any case, we have in the Torah this verbal declaration. Right? He says, here I am, I've come. And he continues with a synopsis of Jewish history. And these psukim should be familiar to all of you. Right? He continues and he says, Aram Yoved Avi, Vayered Mitzrayma, Vayagar Sham Bimtei Ma'at, Vayisham L'Goy Gadol, Atzum V'Rav. Where do you know these psukim from? Vanita, V'Amarta, etc. I'm sorry? The Haggadah Shel Pesach. Okay, that's a whole other discussion, not for this morning, why we use dafka these psukim, what we call the Mikra Bikurim, this declaration. that one who brings his Bikurim has to recite. And he continues, as I said, with this synopsis of Jewish history, how Hashem took us out of Egypt, how we first went down to Egypt, and then Hashem took us out of Egypt. We were enslaved. We were given difficult labor. Hashem took us out with a strong hand and an outstretched arm and all sorts of wonders and miracles. And then he brought us into this place. Pasuk tet vayivienu ela makom azeh vayiten lanu et haaretz azot eretz zavat chalav divash. And he brought us to this place. And he gave us this land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And the Jewish farmer continues and says, and now, v'ata hine eveti et reishit pri hadama asher natata li Hashem. And he says, and now I've brought the first of my fruits, the first of the fruits of this land that Hashem has given me. And then you place your basket down before Hashem and you prostrate yourself. You bow down in the Beit HaMikdash. And then the passage ends, you shall rejoice with all that Hashem has given you, all the good that Hashem has bestowed upon you. You, your household, the Levi, who doesn't have a formal inheritance in the land, so we have to provide for the Levi, of course. That's why we give the priestly gifts and gifts to the Kohanim, the Levim, etc. And the Ger, the convert, also we have to provide for him, the convert in your midst. This is a theme, of course, throughout the Torah. Torah always instructs us to ensure that, you know, the widow, the orphan, the convert, they too are happy. They too are celebrating. When we have a mitzvah to rejoice, we also have to ensure that they rejoice as well. It's something that we know. It's part of the mitzvah Simchat Yom Tov. But in any case, here, the Torah, and it's so unique, instructs one who brings his first fruits to the holy city of Jerusalem and gives them to the Kohen. He has to make this verbal declaration. He summarizes Jewish history, how we went down to Egypt. We were enslaved there. Hashem brought us out with miracles and wonders, and brought us into this goodly land and blessed us, and here are my first fruits, and we have a mitzvah to rejoice and celebrate. Beautiful. But it's unprecedented. Bikurim, after all, is one of the priestly gifts, one of the matnot kuhuna. And it's unprecedented that you have to make a verbal declaration, that there's some verbal declaration that accompanies the priestly gifts. And in fact, according to the Rambam, the Mikra Bikurim, this verbal declaration, is a mitzvah in and of itself. In addition to the mitzvah of Havat Bikurim, there's a mitzvah to bring the first of your fruits to Jerusalem, to give to the Kohen at the Holy Temple. And then there's a mitzvah to recite this verbal declaration. It's an additional mitzvah. That's very strange. We don't find other examples of that. I mean, there is, the Torah there in Kitavo continues with a vidui, with a confession that is recited with regards to the mitzvah of ma'aser, but that just states that a person followed the mitzvah proper, observed the mitzvah properly, followed the halachot. When a person is an onein, he's not allowed to eat from kodshim. But there's no verbal declaration when a person, for example, brings truma to the kohen. It's not accompanied by some sort of verbal declaration. When you give a kohen challah, you know, we have this mitzvah to separate challah, to take challah. That's a type of truma you give to the kohen, you give to his family. There's no verbal declaration. You make a bracha, okay, but there's no verbal declaration. When you give the first shearings of your sheep, Reshit Agez. It's not accompanied by a verbal declaration. So why here is this mitzvah of Bikurim accompanied by this whole verbal declaration, which again sums up all of Jewish history until the present moment, and expresses thanks, offers up Hakarat HaTov to Hashem for bringing us into this land and giving us of this these first fruits, right? Why? Why the verbal declaration? That's our first question this morning. It's unprecedented. Take a look at source number 2. This is the Mishnah in the 3rd chapter of Masechet Bikurim. And the Mishnah there describes how one designates his Bikurim and how the Jewish people would offer or bring their Bikurim up to Jerusalem. Take a look at Mishnah Aleph, the first Mishnah there. Ketzad mafrishim Bikurim. How do you separate or designate your first fruits? Yored adam b'toch sadehu. A person goes down into his field. V'ro'e te'ina shebikra. He sees a fig that's beginning to ripen. Eshkol shebikar. A cluster of grapes that's beginning to ripen. Rimon shebikar. A pomegranate that's beginning to ripen. I have a pomegranate tree in my garden. I can tell you that the pomegranates are already starting to grow. They're small. They're not edible yet. The Mishnah continues, Kosher begemi, ties it with a little tie, a little string. The Omer, and he says, Hare elu bikurim. These are bikurim. That's how he designates his bikurim, how he separates them from his other fruits. Now notice the Mishnah there mentions 3 fruits, right? The Mishnah mentions figs, mentions grapes, and mentions pomegranates. But what's missing? Everything else. Because after all, the Bikurim is brought from what? All of the Shivat HaMinim. All of the 7 species that the land of Israel is blessed for. That the Torah blesses Eretz Israel, the land of Israel, for these 7 species. Wheat, barley, right? Figs, grapes, pomegranates, olives, dates. Am I missing any? So, why does the Mishnah mention only those 3 fruits? Why does the Mishnah single out those 3 fruits if the mitzvah Bikurim is on all of the Shivat HaMinim? That's our second question. And then the Mishnah continues with a description of just how the Jews would bring their Bikurim up to Jerusalem, how they come on Aliyah LeRegel, they would make the pilgrimage to Jerusalem with such fanfare, and the description here in the Mishnah can only be described as a parade. It was a parade with much fanfare, with so much pomp and ceremony. If you take a look at the next Mishnah, first the Memuneh, the messengers from the Beit Din in Yerushalayim would go out and they would say, Kumu v'nale Tzion el Beit Hashem Elokeinu. Come, arise, and go to Tzion, to the house of God. And the next Mishnah describes how they would come with their animals. Now, they would bring animals, of course, to Yerushalayim as korbanot. One coming on Aliyah LeRegel has to bring an Olat Re'iyah, Shalmei Simcha, and Shalmei Chagiga. So they would bring all of these animals, but they would dress them up, the Mishnah says, when they would bring their Bikurim. The Hashor Horech Lifneim, the Karnav Mitzukot Zahav, they would put gold on the horns of the bulls. The Teret Shel Zayit Birosho, and they would place a crown of olives on his head, an olive branch crown, okay, on his head. That is to allude to the Shivat HaMinim, to olives, which is one of the Shivat HaMinim. Hechalil makel lifneim. And this was accompanied by music, musical accompaniment. The recorder, the flute, whatever the chalil is, would play before the Machmigim Karov Yerushalayim until they came close to Jerusalem. Higiru karov liYerushalayim, shalchu lifneihem v'itru et bikureihem. They got close to Jerusalem. They would, you know, fix up their bikurim, possibly a reference to a discussion in terms of how the bikurim should ideally be presented. If you can mix up all your seven species together, it's better to place each of the minim on a separate plate, so to speak. There's also an additional discussion about Tosefet Bikurim, adding other fruits beyond what you designated. A question about even adding fruits beyond the Shivat HaMinim. But in any case, they would simply make their baskets look nice as they would get close. You may imagine things get shuffled around a little bit on the way to Jerusalem, right? Like in the car, you're bringing, a nice fancy birthday cake to someone. After a long trip in the car, before you bring it into the house, you want to make sure it still looks nice, right? Hapachod hasganim v'agizbarim yotzim likratam lefi kvod hanichnasu. So the different leaders of Jerusalem would come out and greet the pilgrims according to the kavod, the honor due to the different pilgrims who were coming. Hayu yotzim b'kol balei omaniyot shebishalayim omdim lifneihem. So they would come out, and all the artisans of Jerusalem would stand. V'sholim b'shlamam, and they would ask about the welfare of the pilgrims, and they would say, "An achenu anshei makom ploni batim l'shalom." Our brethren, people from such and such a place, you've come in peace, right? So they would say, "Now, if I'm coming with my family," they would say, "Anshei Harnof batim l'shalom." Okay, and then just skip to the next mishnah. Hachelil makel lifnei matshmigin laharabayit, right? They would have musical accompaniment all the way until they got to the Temple Mount. A tremendous fanfare and excitement. Mishnehei, hagozalot al gabei asalim hayu olot, umashu biyadem notin lakohanim. They would have these birds, these turtle doves, that they would bring as elevation offerings. They would be on the sides of the baskets, and whatever they had in their hand, meaning the baskets, they would give to the Kohen. Now, if you turn to page 3 and look at the very top picture, this is a mosaic from the floor of the ancient synagogue in Tzipori, which is from the 5th century. You see there a Bikurim basket, and what do you have on the sides of the basket? Birds, gozalim, gozalot. This is what the Mishnah is describing. Okay. Now, the Yerushalmi explains that they would decorate their baskets with those birds on the side, those birds perched on the sides of the baskets, but dafka on the sides of the baskets, the Yerushalmi says, so that they wouldn't ruin the bikurim. Imagine if you put them on the top of the basket. They would eat all the fruit. Okay. We'll come back to these different mosaics in a moment. But take a look back at the Mishnah. By the way, the Mishnah describes how even Agrippas HaMelech, the king, b'chvodo v'atzmo, would participate in the celebrations, in this parade. He placed his basket on his shoulder. And then Mishnah Chet, at the bottom there, of source number 2, ha'ashirim neviyim bikureihem b'kalatot shel kesef v'shel zahav. The wealthy would bring their bikurim in baskets of gold and silver. Just such pomp and ceremony. There's actually a discussion in the Talmud if the Kohanim would return the baskets of gold and silver. You could imagine it would be expensive. And that seems to be the conclusion, that they would indeed return those baskets. So then why, you may ask, even bring them in the first place on platters of gold and silver if you're only going to ask for them back in return? Why even bring them on platters of gold and silver? Any suggestions? Right, it's all part of the Hidur Mitzvah. It's all part of the pomp and ceremony. You wanted to say something, David?
It's called presentation.
It's called presentation. Absolutely, presentation. Yes, absolutely. So the third question is, why all the fanfare? Why all the pomp and ceremony? This description of this parade coming to Jerusalem. We have a mitzvah to come to the Holy Temple 3 times a year for the Shalosh Regalim, and we don't have such descriptions, but when you bring your Bikurim, in advance of the holiday of Shavuot, there's all this pomp and ceremony. There's music. There's, you know, the animals are in costume, right? It's just incredible what's being described here. It's so beautiful. I always make sure to teach my kids this every year on Shavuot because, you know, this is something that can really capture the imagination of a child, right? And if it doesn't capture their imagination, so you have books already today, like from the Machon HaMikdash, the Temple Institute, which have pictures, beautiful pictures, which depict this very scene, okay? And we'll see in a moment how this scene and the Mitzvah Bikurim has really captured the minds and the hearts of the Jewish people throughout the millennia. So why is this mitzvah accompanied with such pomp and ceremony, with such fanfare? Again, it's without precedent. You don't bring your Trumah or your Challah or your Reshit Agez, your first shearings of your sheep, with music and costumes and gold and silver. What's going on here? Okay. So three questions this morning. Number one, why the verbal declaration? Number two, why does the Mishnah single out these three fruits if the mitzvah applies to all the Shiva Taminim, all the seven species? And finally, our third question this morning, why all the fanfare? Why the pomp and ceremony? Why the parade? We don't find an example of this by the other Matnot Kuna. And the answer to all of these questions is found in an incredible passage here in source number 5 in the Chidushim of Rabbi Menachem Zemba. Chidushei Hagon Rabbi Menachem Zemba Hashem Yikom Domo here in source number 5. For those of you who are not familiar with Menachem Zemba, he was really a Gon Olam, a Gon Adir, a Gon Mufla, a Talmid Muthak of the First Order. He lived in Praga, which was a neighborhood, really its own independent city, on the other side of the Wisła, or the Vistula River, Warsaw, on the other side. Today, Warsaw is all brand new. For those of you who participated in that multimedia presentation that I gave over Zoom on Yom HaShoah, so you saw pictures and videos and things from my trips to Poland. And Warsaw today, yeah, Warsaw was completely destroyed during the war. I mean, just flattened. But Praga was not destroyed. Praga remained intact. Praga was occupied early on by the Russians, by the Soviets. Praga is just on the other side of the Wisła, the Vistula. And when I was there, I found the home in which Rav Menachem Zemba lived. A fascinating story, but for another time. But he was just a fascinating personality. Huge, huge Talmud Chacham. He was offered so many different prominent rabbinic positions throughout his lifetime, but he never accepted them. He always shied away from the limelight. He was boreach min hakavod, retreated from the spotlight. He was offered to be the Rav of Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh. He refused the position. He was offered to be the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Chochmei Lublin in Lublin after the untimely death of Rav Meir Shapira. Always ran from kavod, and he only got involved in Jewish communal life at the insistence of the Gerer Rebbe, with whom he was very close. And so he became an important figure in Agudas Yisrael, or Agudas Yisrael, Agudat Yisrael, before the war. During the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, he was running around trying to find supplies to make a Pesach Seder, trying to find matzot. As you all know, the uprising began when? Erev Pesach. The Warsaw Ghetto Uprising began Erev Pesach. So imagine the middle of the uprising. He's running around trying to find matzot, trying to make a seder. Unfortunately, just a few short days later, he was gunned down and killed. And he had written tens of thousands of Chidushei Torah, fascinating Torah ideas on the Talmud Bavli, the Talmud Yerushalmi, the entire Mishnah Torah of the Rambam. All lost. All completely destroyed. All lost. We only have a few of his chidushim, really Sridei Esh, you know, from the Churban in Europe, just little ideas here and there. I'm not equating the loss of scholarship to the loss of human life, chas v'shalom, but we have to appreciate that there was so much Torah that was lost during the war. And that too is a great tragedy. The Maharami Rotenberg, after all, mourns the burning of the Talmud in Paris in 1242, and he writes this kinah, Shali Sufa Ba'esh, which we recite on Tisha B'Av. So it is a tragedy. And as many of you know, the Sifri Alumit, the National Library here in Jerusalem, Israel's National Library, was created at the behest of Ben-Gurion, and they allotted a lot of money for it. Actually, you know, now they're building a whole new building closer to the Knesset. Now, even more money going into it. Up until now, it's been on the campus of Hebrew University, the Safra campus here in Jerusalem. But Ben-Gurion had this vision of creating a library that will preserve every Jewish text, every Jewish book, so that we will never again have the same kind of loss of Torah scholarship as we experienced during the war. And in fact, there's actually a law on the books here in Israel that anyone who publishes a book here in the state of Israel has to donate two copies to the National Library. Okay? Two copies. Yes. One is for circulation and reference, and the other is just to keep, you know, to keep in their archives, to keep in their cellar. Okay. So, Rav Menachem Zembo is huge, huge gone, and from this just small idea, you see his brilliance and his creativity as a thinker. A tremendous chiddush. So here's what he writes, okay? Source number 5. Ita b'shem ha'arizal. We have in the name of the Ari HaKadosh, Yitzchak Luria Ashkenazi, great Kabbalist of 16th century Tzfat, perhaps the greatest Kabbalist to have ever lived. D'mitzvat havat habikurim ki tikun l'chet hamiraglim. That the mitzvah of bringing bikurim, the first fruits, is a tikun, is a rectification of the sin of the spies. D'harei hamiraglim hutziu dibat al ha'aretz, u'mitzvat bikurim nitna mishum chibat ha'aretz. What did the spies do? They spoke dibah, they spoke slander. And as a tikkun for that, we bring the bikurim, which is about chibah, love, love for the land. The mitzvah of bikurim is about chibah ta'aretz. It's an exercise in love for the land, expressing our love for the land. And then, v'osif al zeh hagon, Rabbi Menachem Zemba, zatzal, we can add Hashem Yikom Domo, right? This is Rav Menachem Zemba's chiddush, that we have a hint of this in the very Mishnah itself, the Mishnah that we read, Perek Gimel Mishnah Aleph, De'ita Sham, Adam Yored B'toch Sadeh, a man goes down to his field, V'ro'et Te'ina Shebikra, Eshkol Shebiker, Rimon Shebiker, he sees these three things, a fig that ripens, a cluster of grapes that are ripening, a pomegranate that's ripening. Koshra begemi v'omer harei elu bikurim. He ties them with a tie and he says, oh, these are bikurim. Hinei muskarim kan hashlosha minim hamuskarim gam etzel hamiraglim. Wow. Incredible chiddush. He says, we ask the question, why these three fruits mentioned explicitly by the Mishnah, the mitzvah applies to all the shivat haminim? Rav Menachem Zemba explains, because these are the very three fruits that the spies bring back with them to the land of Israel. From the land of Israel. Thank you. From the land of Israel. It's these very three fruits. Shotam hem hiviu me'eretz Yisrael, that they brought up from the land of Israel. These three very fruits. The haremez la'kesher shebeneihem. And in the Mishnah, by the Mishnah, stating only these three fruits, it's supposed to be an allusion, a remez, a hint, an allusion to the Parashat Hamiraglim, the story of the spies. Okay? The spies sinned with these three fruits. So the Mishnah makes mention of these three fruits. The spies sinned by speaking slander against the land. Well, we have this mitzvah to speak positively. And now we understand, really, the answer to all of these questions is found in this beautiful chiddush of a Menachem Zemba. Now we can understand why we have a special mitzvah to make a verbal declaration. Why the mitzvah of Bikurim is accompanied by this verbal declaration. Because they sinned, the spies sinned with their faculty of speech. And to rectify that sin, what do? We also use our faculty of speech, but we use it to articulate a love for the land. And so we give the summary of Jewish history and how Hashem brought us up out of Egypt and He brought us to this goodly land and He gave us these fruits and we thank Hashem. We have to articulate verbally our love for the land. Okay, because they use their power of speech for something negative. We have to use our power of speech for something positive. And now we can also understand why this mitzvah, again, without precedent, this is one of the priestly gifts. Why is it accompanied with such fanfare, such excitement, such a parade? For this very reason. Because we are broadcasting to the world our Hakarat HaTov, our thanks to Hashem for giving us this land and these fruits. We're expressing a love for the land. We're doing so verbally. And we're doing so with tremendous fanfare, with tremendous pomp and ceremony, right? You can't just do this mitzvah sitting down, right? It has to be accompanied with such pomp and ceremony and excitement, because after all, it's there to, in a sense, combat the chet hameraglim. And as we know, and we'll touch on this in another moment, the chet hameraglim is unfortunately alive and well today. But just take a look here at sources 3 and 4. I put here in source 3 some psukim from Parashat Shlach, where the Torah describes how the spies went down to Nachal Eshkol, and they took there a cluster of grapes, and they put it on two poles, and they had two people carrying it. Right, that famous image that you're all familiar with from the Ministry of Tourism. It would seem to be maybe a poor choice, right? It's like a little ironic. That trip, that tour of the land did not end so well. I don't know why the Ministry of Tourism adopted that as their emblem. Out of all the emblems they could have chosen, of all the symbols they could have chosen, because as we'll see in a moment, Rashi explains that they had ill intent. They brought those fruits back to scare the Jewish people, to scare the Jewish nation. Now, you could ask the question, well, what was so wrong about them bringing fruits back? In fact, Moshe himself tells them to bring a sample, to bring a sample of the fruits. Moshe tells them, "Ulikachtem mipri haaretz," bring back some fruit of the land. What did they do wrong? So take a look here at Rashi in source number 4 at the top of page 2. Rashi explains exactly what they did wrong. It was all about their intent. Rashi says, Yoshua and Kalev lo nitlu klum. Lo nitlu klum. Yoshua and Kalev did not take any fruits. Lefi shakro atzman lo tzi diba nitkavnu. Kishem shepiria mishune kach amam mishune. Why? Because those who did bring back fruits, it wasn't to say, wow, what a goodly land. Look at this tremendous blessing. They did so with the wrong intent, with ill intent, Rashi explains. They did so to scare the Jewish people and say, just like this fruit is strange, so too the inhabitants of the land are strange. Just like this fruit is giant, look at these mutant fruits, so too the land is full of giants. The land is inhospitable. Okay? So much of life is about perspective. I remember one year, not long after we made Aliyah, it was shortly before Parshat Shlach. Around that time, the figs are in season. I was at Machane Yudah, and I saw figs, and I had to ask the seller, what are these things? I saw figs the size of softballs, okay? The size of, even bigger than the size of grapefruits. I mean, so large. Now you could look at that and say, wow, this is so bizarre. This is so strange. Look at these mutant fruits. It's abnormal. It's grotesque. Or you could say, wow, what tremendous shefa bracha. What tremendous blessing God has blessed this land with. It's all about your intent. It's all about your perspective. I'm sorry, you wanted to say something?
No, I just they're trying to show how the land is not stable, yet the land is created. He's unusually God's food. That doesn't seem to sound like a grossest thing.
Well, but hold on one second. It depends on what your kavanah is when you look at those fruits. Are you coming with the, you know, approach, with the perspective from someone who loves the land and is appreciative and, wow, Hashem, this is incredible? Or are you coming from the perspective of, oy vey, right? This is bizarre, right? If your whole attitude is negative, that's going to inform your approach to everything, to the world. It's all a matter of perspective. Now remember, there were 12 spies. Yehoshua and Kalev see the very same land. They see the very same fruits, but they have a very completely different approach, a different attitude. We'll get to in a moment. But just take a look at source number 6. This is fascinating. If you take a look at the language of the Torah itself, it would seem that the Torah itself, in commanding us to bring our first fruits and in giving us this verbal declaration, it would seem that the Torah itself is hinting to the fact that the mitzvah of Bikurim is an allusion to the Chet HaMeraglim. The language, the Lashon of the Torah is so similar. Here in Parashat Shlach, Moshe commands them, Ulekachtem mipri haaretz, bring up from the fruit of the land. Bring a sample. And what does Hashem command the Jewish farmer? Again, ulakachtem v'lakachta mipri haaretz mireishit pri kol hadama asher tavi me'artzecha. Very similar lashon. The Meraglim describe how banu el haaretz asher shelachtanu v'gam zavat chalav u'divashi v'zeh periyah. We came to the land that you sent us. It is a land of milk and honey, a land flowing with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. And the one bringing his bikurim, very similar language. Again, we said that he has to express verbally. He has to articulate this verbally. Very unique. There's a special mitzvah of mikra bikurim you don't find by other priestly gifts. And the language that he articulates is very similar to what the miraglim describe. Here he says, kivati El Haaretz. They say, we came, and says, I've come to the land. Kivati El Haaretz. That Hashem has sworn to give my forefathers, to give us. Viten lanu et haaretz hazot, eretz zavat chalav udvash. He too calls the land a land flowing with milk and honey, just like the spies. Now I have brought my fruit. Very similar. There is, and I made a chart just so you can see visually how similar the language is. There is this biblical parallelism. Very similar lashon here. It's incredible. And it's as if almost the Torah is invoking the Chet HaMeraglim, as if the Torah is alluding to the sin of the spies. They spoke diba, they spoke slander. We have to broadcast chiba, love, as Rav Menachem Zembe explains. This is a tikkun, according to the Ari HaKadosh. And I said, you know, so much is about one's attitude, one's approach, right? You have more biblical parallelism in the language here in source number 10, another little chart I made between what the miraglim say and what they argue versus what Kalev and Yehoshua say. A very similar language. What do they say? Ha'aretz asher avarnu v'alatur ota, eretz ochelet yoshveha hi. The land that we've crossed over to spy out, it's a land that eats its inhabitants. It's an eretz ochelet yoshveha, a land that eats its inhabitants. And corresponding to that, what do Kalev and Yehoshua say? Ha'aretz asher avarnu v'alatur ota. Again, very same language. The land that we have crossed over to spy out, Tovah ha'aretz ma'od ma'od. The land is very good. Very, very good. Ma'od ma'od. So they say it's an eretz ochelet yoshveha. And Yehoshua and Kalev, they see the same land and they say, oh no, this land is very, very good. It's all a matter of perspective. The miraglim say, lo nuchal alot elam, ki chazaki mimenu. We cannot go up and take this land, inhabitants of this land, are much stronger than us. The nation that dwells there is much stronger than us. And what does Kalev say? How does he answer? Again, very similar Lashon. They say, Lo nuchal alot. He says, Alo na'aleh. No, no, no. We shall surely ascend the Arash Nu'ota and possess the land. Ki yachol nuchalah. Because we can do it. We can do it. Ki yachol nuchal. They say, Lo nuchal. He says, Ki yachol nuchal. So you have this parallelism, this parallel in the very language. And it's all a matter of one's perspective. You can see the modern state of Israel as a land that eats its inhabitants. Or you could say it's a land that's tova ha'aretz ma'od ma'od. Right? We'll come back to that in a moment. I just want to show you here on pages 3 and 4 how this mitzvah bikurim becomes so central. It takes such a central place in our tradition, in Jewish art, specifically the art of the Beit Knesset, the art of the synagogue during the Byzantine period. Here in source number 3, you have a number of pictures from mosaics that appear on floors of Byzantine period synagogues. At the top, the picture we already looked at, that's from the synagogue in Tzipori from the 5th century. Then you have the synagogue in Ma'on from the 6th century. Tzipori is from the 5th century, a little earlier, and Ma'on is from the 6th century, and in Beit Alpha also from the 6th century. And you could see, you know, how the mitzvah Bikurim is such a beloved mitzvah. And that's what's being described in the Mishnah, that we saw tremendous pomp and ceremony and fanfare and excitement, an expression of our love for the land, our thanks to Hashem, our hakarat hatov for the land and for its fruit. And so it's so central that it appears in these mosaics, in these synagogues. Okay, it plays such a central role. It's such a beloved mitzvah. And as we saw, that's what the mitzvah is about, you know, at its very essence. It's about chibat haaretz. It's there to articulate our love for the land. And if you turn to the next page, here, page 4 here, these are pictures from tikkasim, from ceremonies, from kibbutzim. Here are pictures from the 1950s, where the kibbutznikim are bringing their bikurim. Now, if you know anything about the kibbutz movement, it wasn't necessarily the most religious of movements. Hey, you do have religious kibbutzim, but these pictures are not necessarily from religious kibbutzim. You don't see kippot on the heads of the men. In some pictures, you don't even see shirts on the men. But they are reenacting this scene from the Mishnah, where they're bringing their bikurim with tremendous excitement and fanfare and music. You see the children have musical instruments and their beautiful baskets, and they're bringing their fruits, okay, in wagons and carrying them, and they're wearing their clothes and their costumes, and they have their animals in tow. Why? Why? Now again, these pictures are from secular kibbutzim that were founded by these chalutzim, these pioneers, these tzionim, these secular Zionists who threw off the yoke of religion in favor of Marxism, socialism, Zionism, the isms of the 19th and early 20th centuries. Why are they celebrating Shavuot with the Havata Bikurim? What are they doing here? Why are they offering Bikurim with such fanfare and excitement? What is this about? Any suggestions?
This doesn't go to the actual purpose of the kibbutzim, to the idea of simply of going, of turning the wasteland into producing, you know, all of the vegetables, etc. This is basically what the kibbutzim wanted.
Sure, but I think it's more than that. Just like the Jewish farmer bringing his bikurim during temple times is coming and saying, Hashem, you took us out of Egypt. We were enslaved there and took us out of Egypt. It was harsh labor and suffering. And you took us out with a strong hand and an outstretched arm and all sorts of signs and wonders. And you brought us into this land and you gave us this land to possess it, to inherit it. And here now are our first fruits. That's what's being expressed here as well. Maybe not the same religious meaning. I don't know. I wasn't there. I can't tell you whether they invoked Hashem or not. But I can tell you that in our own day, we've seen a return to our land. We've been fortunate to build a state in our ancestral homeland. And while we're not bringing, unfortunately yet, our first fruits up to the Holy Temple in Jerusalem and bringing them to a Kohen there, the kibbutzim adopted this practice, and I've been told that on some kibbutzim still continue this practice each year. I see some of you nodding, so I guess that means I'm on the right track. That they're bringing their first fruits just like the person coming to the Holy Temple saying, wow, we've made it. We've made it. We were enslaved in Egypt, right? We were enslaved in Egypt. Hashem took us out and brought us into this land, and now He blessed this land, and we've grown our fruits. And so these chalutzim, these kibbutznikim here, they're doing it as Jews. But what are they saying? Hashem, you took us out of Egypt. Hashem, you took us out of Europe. I think it's so moving and so beautiful. I didn't know about this until recently, you know, until I started doing some digging, and I heard that this was done. I once gave a shiur about the Purim 10 years ago, and someone said, "Yeah, you do know that they still do that. It was a big part." So I dug up these pictures and I did some research, and I think it's moving. I think it's so beautiful. You know, we can debate, you know, the religious intent, if God is part of the picture or not. But the fact of the matter is that just like the Jew coming to the Beit HaMikdash is saying, we left, Hashem took us out of Egypt and brought us into this land, and we are so fortunate, and here are our first fruits. They're saying, Hashem took us out of Europe. Why don't they say it? We came out of Europe, and now we are back in our land, and here we are bringing our first fruits. I think it's so beautiful. At its very core, as we've seen this morning, the mitzvah of Bikurim is about an expression of love for the land. It's something that has to be articulated, has to be accompanied by a verbal declaration, okay? And ultimately, this too is an expression, whether it's, you know, being done on a secular kibbutz, it too is an expression of love for the land. And that's what the mitzvah is at its very core. And that's why this mitzvah is so vital and so relevant today. With the current situation, my cousin, who's a lawyer in Dallas, Texas, okay, sent me a message. Wow, Israel is taking a real beating in the media. Okay, that's the message he sent me on WhatsApp. Israel is always being demonized and delegitimized, but especially right now, we don't have a right to defend ourselves. And
the Democrat Party.
There is so much distortion and Ivut, misinformation and disinformation and disingenuity and hatred that is being broadcast. So much hatred. The sin of the spies is alive and well today, unfortunately. And even, unfortunately, in the Jewish world, it was just a letter signed by all these non-Orthodox rabbis condemning the state of Israel for protecting herself, for defending herself, for protecting her citizens, okay? And the sin of the spies is unfortunately alive and well today. And the mitzvah Bikurim is there to combat that. We have to combat all that negativity with positivity. We have to combat the diba with chiba. And so this mitzvah is so relevant and so vital today. And, you know, a person can, as I said, choose to see the modern state of Israel as an Eretz Ochelet Yeshiveha, or say no. Torah, tovah aretz ma'od ma'od. The land is very good, with all of its challenges, right? I'm not saying we have to be naive, but we have to recognize how fortunate we are. I mean, our great-great-grandparents could only dream of reaching the shores of the land of Israel and, you know, sitting in traffic for 45 minutes driving in from Arnof this morning. They could only dream of being yelled at by an egged bus driver. And we take it for granted. The Mitzvah Bikurim teaches us that we dare not take it for granted. But it's not enough to feel a sense of gratitude. It has to be articulated. You have to express it. So this mitzvah is so relevant today. You know, Israel is constantly being demonized and delegitimized in the international community and in the media, even before this most recent conflict. Students of mine are constantly facing anti-Israel sentiment on campus, especially now. We have our enemies within and without. We've seen that in recent days and recent weeks. The rioting in Lod and Ramla and Akko and other places, just devastating. There's so many negative voices, so we have to combat that. I always say that today we need less tziniut, cynicism, and more tzionut, more Zionism. The psalmist tells us, Urei betuv Yerushalayim kol yemei chayecha. See the good in Jerusalem. Choose to see the good in Jerusalem all the days of your life. Kol yemei chayecha. Not just on the good days, even on the days that are not so good. And this has to be articulated and expressed. You know, the war today is not just being fought on the battlefield. It's also being fought on the battlefield of public opinion, in the media, on social media, on Facebook. As the prophet Isaiah tells us, Leman Tzion lo echeshe, Leman Yerushalayim lo eshkot. Can't be silent. For the sake of Tzion, for the sake of Yerushalayim, cannot be silent. We have to stand up. We live during confusing times, challenging times, yes, but we live during exciting times. We live at a unique moment in history. The mitzvah Bikurim teaches us to see the good, to see the blessings, and to lift our voice in praise of the land, and to quiet those voices that choose to see only the negative. Have a great day. See you all next Wednesday. Bezrat Hashem.